Balboa Reservoir Community Advisory Committee to order. And before I do, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping over here. For those of you that are looking for an agenda or the minutes, they're over here on this counter to my right. I guess that, or to my left would be your right. And the restrooms are off on to your left. And first of all, hello, my name is Robert Neubauer. I'm the vice chair of the committee. Our chair, Lisa Spinelli, had other business. She wasn't able to make it tonight. So I'll fill in as best I can. I'd like to take a roll call right now. So I'll say your name on the committee, and then if you just let me know you're here. So Maurice Rivers, no, okay, Christine Godinez, okay, John Winston, and Howard Chung,
yeah.
Bridget Davila, not here yet, Michael Ahrens,
here.
And Robert Neubauer here, okay. Before we get into opening the meeting, I understand that Supervisor Norman Yee is here, and he would like to just take a couple of minutes and provide some opening comments. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Supervisor Yee.
Thanks, Robert. Okay, I'm Supervisor Norman Yee. The Balboa Reservoir is in my district, in District 7. I see some familiar faces and some not so familiar faces, which is good. Always open to the process, to the public. Since 2014, when Mayor Lee announced the public lands for housing program, the Balboa Reservoir site has been the focus of much hope and as well as concerns in our community. Some view it as a critical opportunity to utilize public land to help address the city's housing crisis, and others are concerned about the impacts that a large-scale housing project will have in our district. We are now at the crucial point, junction. We have had years of community discussion and input, created a detailed set of development principles and parameters, which serve as a guiding principle for the selection of the development team that you're going to hear from today, and then have seen the preliminary designs from the developers. During this time, I am proud to say that even though Prop K requires 33% of the housing in such developments to be made permanently affordable for to low and moderate income households, I was able to push with the CAC agreement this project to be 50% affordable. I would like to thank the members of the Balboa Reservoir CAC, Avalon Bay Communities and Bridge Housing Corporation, Mission Housing Development Corporation, Pacific Union Development Company, and Habitat for Humanity for the hard work of getting us to this point. Today, we will be reviewing the City Commission Fiscal Feasibility Report. The city hired a third-party consultant to produce a fiscal feasibility analysis to provide the Board of Supervisors with information for our consideration in evaluating the fiscal feasibility of the project in accordance with San Francisco Administrative Code Chapter 29. This is a necessary step before we can do an even deeper analysis of the project through the state mandated environmental review and project entitlement process. If you walk away from this meeting with one fact, it should be this. The fiscal feasibility findings do not commit the Board of Supervisors, the San Francisco PUC, or any other public agency with jurisdiction over any part of this project to approve the terms of any transaction or grant any development overview or the fiscal feasibility finding. What it doesn't do is really foreclose the possibility of considering alternatives to the project or mitigation measures to reduce or avoid significant environmental impacts or prelude the city up to the city. The project will have to undergo environmental review from the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, and will be subject to public review in accordance with the process of the city and other government agencies with approval rights over the project before any binding agreements, entitlements, or other regulatory approvals required for the project will be considered. This means that the unit count that was analyzed in this report, which is about 1,100 units, can potentially be changed as this process moves forward and as we continue to refine the project and its mitigations. Tomorrow, in conjunction with Supervisor Asha Safai, I will be introducing a resolution accepting the findings of the fiscal feasibility report. A hearing on this resolution is tentatively scheduled for March 1st at the Budget Committee of the Board. I look forward to hearing the discussion today and thank you for your ongoing interest and participation. I hope that through this kind of dialogue, we will create the best possible project for not only District 7, but for the city. Thank you very much. All yours, Robert.
Thank you very much, Supervisor. Just a couple more housekeeping items. I encourage everybody here to sign in on the sign sheet. That's the best way that for us to keep in touch with you in terms of ongoing developments as it applies to the work of this committee. And also, we're at a new venue tonight. It's important that our transcriber, for those of us on the committee, they can't really see us given where we are. So when you have comments, please state your name. And also, when we're giving public testimony later on, if you will be so kind to state your name and maybe even what neighborhood you're from so we have a context of it. Now, why we're here tonight, we have this new venue today because for the last, what is it, almost 3 years now, we've been meeting over at City College and looking over the parameters for this development that's led to the RFP, and we have a proposal and the development opportunity has been awarded. The notion was that perhaps it was time to get kind of a broader citywide perspective and hold it at a more central location. So that is why we're at this room here at Marvin City Hall. All right. The agenda is, I hope everybody's seen the agenda or has a copy of it. And we also have some ground rules with regard to this meeting. I'm not going to go over them. It's just common sense stuff. We're not going to talk over people. We're not going to cheer. We're not going to jeer. We're going to be civil. We're going to allow everybody to speak their piece and just have a meeting that is run in a civil manner. So I hope everybody can honor that. And in the event that isn't occurring, that's kind of my role here to kind of intervene, so I hope that that's not necessary. We have the agenda, or pardon me, we have the minutes from our last meeting, and I'm going to open it for...
Mike Larens, I've reviewed them, and I think they're, again, very good, and I move approval of the minutes of the prior meeting.
And I'll be looking for a second. Okay, and before we vote on it, I want to make sure that we have the opportunity for public comment. Is there public comment?
About yes.
And if you will be so kind, we have a microphone over here. If anybody else has a public comment, please, if you don't mind, just queue up.
Rose by Westwood Park. I just saw one correction that mine said. On number 5, question and answer, it said the project principles include the need to work with surrounding neighborhood. And I had stated that the city of San Francisco planning principles state in various documents the requirement to work with and fit in with the surrounding neighborhoods. And then I use as an example more ownership units. But it was the city's principles, not this project's principles. Thank you.
Do I understand that you're waiving the minutes?
Pardon?
Are you waiving the discussion?
No, we're not waiving. We're asking for public comment on the minutes. We have a motion to approve and it's been seconded. Before we vote, we want to hear it from the public.
Okay. Harry Bernstein, Merced Heights. A few corrections. Bottom of page 3, top of page 4 in the discussion of affordable housing. It says that there's... Bridge, Mission, and Habitat for Humanity are building the affordable housing. It says 50% of all units affordable. This should say up to 50% affordable, because the financial feasibility report itself itself says up to half of the units will be affordable to a range of low, moderate, and middle-income households. 17% in there is open to question at this point. There isn't the financing for it, so there should not be a claim that there is 50%. Top of page, middle of, page 7 with Steve Martin Pinto, said it would be great for these to be open and airy with front, back, and side yards. This is better for families. It would also more respectfully of the neighborhood character. That last sentence is not transcribed correctly. I don't know what it is, but it would also be more respectful to the neighborhood character or something of that. It's not English as it appears. Top of page 8, line 2, there's a line that says, it's not just about aesthetics. I don't think anybody was talking about aesthetics, A-S-C-E-T-I-C-S, which is what it reads. It should be aesthetics, and I hope that can be changed. On the bottom of page 8, I mentioned that I don't see how this project fits in with the community. And then it said, I think you were looking to displace the community. But I added, other than the homeowners, you may be forcing transitory people, such as students, to go elsewhere. And this may be your intention, but there's a reality that you're not talking about. That's much more than what was said there. And then the final statement in the whole minutes, I guess, on page 10. It says, I would like to have a list of all parcels offered to schools and nonprofits. This was not quite correctly stated. Should have said, I mean, it did say there's just one change. I would like to have a list of all projects in the city on city-owned land. That's the point. And which of those were ever offered to schools and nonprofits and not to developers? That was left out over the period of the last 50 years. Is my contention that even though this is a legal requirement that these any surplus land be made available to the public, I think it rarely is, and I would like the staff to survey and come up with as many as there are.
Are you just about wrapped up there?
That was the last sentence.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, having heard any further public comment? Okay, having heard public comment, we have a motion on the table. It's been seconded. Do we need further discussion? Okay.
No, I just think the drafter should go back and make there were some obvious typos and make whatever changes seem appropriate.
Could people speak into the mic if they're talking?
The 1, 2, 3. We're going together. Okay.
I would just ask that the drafter of the minutes go back and correct those typos, and if there's anything obvious that was omitted from the transcript to include that, but with that, my motion stands.
Okay, with that, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Opposed? None. It's unanimous. Okay, we're going to move on to item number 3, a recap of process in January CAC meeting. It's a discussion item. For those of us that have been following these meetings, this is going to be old business. We've seen it before. Those of you that are new to this, this is really directed to try to bring some of the new folks up to speed to see what's been taking place. So with that in mind, I'm going to turn this over to... Okay. I'll turn this over to Emily Lesk.
So I'm Emily Lesk. I am a project manager on this project with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. And we are going to start out on the first item, just giving a quick recap, because we have so many new people here tonight who haven't been part of the process at all of our meetings before. So I am very briefly going to go over the history of the project and kind of where we are, and then turn it over to the development team to talk about, give a recap of our prior meeting in January, which was focused specifically on housing. So we've been at this for about 3 years. As Supervisor, you mentioned, it was back in November of 2014 that Mayor Ed Lee announced the Public Lands for Housing program and identified the Balboa Reservoir as an important site in as part of that. We started doing community outreach for the next couple of months, and then in spring 2015, Supervisor Yee and the Board of Supervisors established this Balboa Reservoir CAC to be a more formal body for feedback and discussion on the project. So the CAC, this is our 26th meeting of the CAC, but the first 16 between August 2015 and September 2016, the CAC advised the city on a set of development principles and parameters for the project, which were then rolled into a request for proposals and a request for qualifications to competitively select a development team to partner with the city to create housing at the Balboa Reservoir. And that process ended in August 2017 with the announcement of our development team, which is a partnership between a handful of nonprofit and for-profit housing developers in the city. So the co-master developers are Bridge Housing and Avalon Bay Communities, along with Mission Housing, Habitat for Humanity, and Pacific Union Development Company. In November of last year, the city entered into exclusive negotiations with that development team, formalizing the fact that we were going to work together and focus our efforts on this partnership. So now we're in a new stage that looks like it's going to take about another 2 years, where the developer and the city are working with the community to refine the development plan and the site design, using the development team's initial proposal as a starting place, but discussing the various elements of it and how they might evolve, as well as doing technical and environmental analysis, which is what we're going to talk about as part of the next presentation tonight, negotiating business terms, all the while continuing to have CAC meetings and do community engagement. And then it will culminate in actually determining what the project and what its characteristics are going to be, and taking that to the SFPUC Commission, the Planning Commission, and the Board of Supervisors to finally get approvals for the project. So as part of that, we're now in a series of CAC and community meetings, walking through the initial development proposal and doing deep dives, largely led by the development team and their designers to really get feedback and make adjustments around specific elements of the project. So it started out with introductions and open spaces, then transportation, circulation, and parking. Last month, the focus was on housing, both housing affordability and housing design. Tonight, we are taking a little bit of a break from that series because we wanted to share kind of this more bureaucratic milestone as city staff with you around this fiscal feasibility report. And then next month, we'll get back into really digging into the project and its characteristics with a master plan update. And then over the next few months from April through August, circling back and getting back into the same elements of the project and continuing to iterate and get feedback. So open space programming and design, transportation on the site, so walking, biking, and cars, getting back into housing affordability and character, talking about off-site transportation as well, and sustainability. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to someone from the development team, Brad Wiblin from Bridge Housing, who's going to give a recap of what happened last month at the meeting where we focused on housing.
Thanks, Emily. As Emily mentioned, Brad Wiblin, representing Bridge Housing, here with our partner from Avalon Bay. As mentioned, we're kind of the master developers of this 17-acre parcel, so Bridge's role is really to kind of curate the affordable half of these units, and through that effort, we brought Habitat for Humanity in, so there will be for sale affordable, or what we call BMR units. And also Mission Housing will be a participant and be developing housing and daycare here. I'll try to be really quick, and Joe and I are going to share this task. So for those that haven't attended these, at the beginning of each of these meetings, we try to recap what we heard at the last meeting. So that's quickly what I'm trying to do here. There was a lot of questions about detail. Affordable housing is kind of a complex business of acronyms and detailed minimum and maximum incomes and maximum rents. So the first sort of comment was, can we get some real detail about that? And the answer is yes, we will bring back very specific details, whether it's a low-income one-bedroom unit, what the rent for that would be, what the minimum and maximum incomes would be, and that will work its way up through, you know, very low, low, moderate, middle income. And I assume we'll also have the for sale component discussed as well. So we'll come back with that detail. Similar question around data, how many units, what unit types, and how many people do you expect on each in each bedroom? So we'll come back with our guess at the best estimate of the population that will probably live here. There was a question about the City College of San Francisco and their need for both faculty, staff, and student housing. And as many of you have heard, we are proposing to build faculty housing on the lower reservoir site. So part of our affordability requirement will probably be met by faculty and staff from City College. As we've talked about before, students may qualify for, in general, the affordable housing. We are working with City College right now to understand their needs and their goals, and not only on the lower reservoir, but even on the upper reservoir site. Comment about the ratio of ownership to rental. So our ratio right now is something close to 50-50. And I think the comment from the neighborhood was, well, this is a neighborhood of single-family ownership homes. Maybe you should think about more ownership. And I will say that we are adding more townhome ownership units to the project. And as Emily stated, we'll be coming back and rolling out the changes to the plan that respond to all these questions. And then finally, can you show us examples of where good affordable housing has been done? And you don't have to believe me, but I'm going to tout the Bridge Housing website, the Mission Housing website, and the Habitat for Humanity website as some initial places to go. And if anybody specifically wants to go and actually tour buildings here in San Francisco or the East Bay or anywhere that's convenient for you, we'd be happy to organize that. And with that, I'm going to let Joe take the next couple of slides.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Joe Kirchhoffer. I'm with Avalon Bay, and we are the market rate developer. So we are a developer, owner, and builder of market rate housing all over San Francisco. Have a long history here. We actually built the building that's right next door to this site along Ocean Avenue. It's called Avalon Ocean Avenue. That's where the Whole Foods is. And I guess that's just by way of introduction for the folks that haven't seen us at all these other meetings. So the other topic at the last meeting was kind of starting to talk about building design and then how that turns into neighborhood character and some of the other... neighborhood character and you know, the character of the site we'd be building, along with building scale. So this got into a fair amount of detail, and we got a lot of very detailed comments. So I'll just go through pretty quickly as to what we heard last time. There were a lot of comments about having a stronger entryway and a stronger kind of front door for folks coming from the northeast side, basically from Sunnyside. Definitely, we've heard that comment. We understand it. I think it's something that we've had on our radar about, you know, having to have a good entry point at the northeast corner. If you think about our site, there's also the issue, you know, our site, the corner of our site is kind of at the back of Reardon High School. So if we're going to have a successful entry point, we need to have a successful entry at our site, and then it also out at Phelan, at the front of Reardon at Phelan, that's an entry point as well. So, you know, some of this is going to be part of that coordination with City College and making the sites work together. Second comment that's on here is put the tallest buildings where they will have the least impact on the neighborhoods, and I think we've, you know, impact meaning being closest to the folks that are already living there. I think our initial proposal intended to do that by putting the height on the east side of our of the reservoir site. There were some comments about, you know, potentially maybe move that down from the northeast corner and put that more along the south. So we're gonna think about how that would work. Some questions about how building heights were measured. The quick answer is the building height is measured from the street next to the building, and then on sloping sites, the planning department has a whole formula of how that gets related and works out. And then the second part of this bullet is, are there ways to keep the site grade lower so that you're basically keeping the streets lower, the buildings aren't as tall? We've kind of kicked that around with the design team. There are potentially some ways to do it, but the tricky part is we're going to need to meet the street on all four sides. So, you know, there's a limit to how much you can warp the ground. The buildings need to be beautiful and compatible with the neighborhood. The example that people pointed to was the newer development on Ocean and Miramar. You know, this is something we'll talk a whole lot more about as we get into design. But, you know, one of the parameters and the principles from the CAC was have a range of different styles and even hiring different architects to make sure we have a range of different styles. So we intend to do that. I think we intend to hire great architects and have great design, and they're going to, you know, the folks we hire will be, I think, overwhelmingly local, most likely, and will be great at pulling out what are the special characteristics and the special things that we want to have, that we want to retain, to really make sure that we're fitting into the neighborhood. And then the final bullet on this one, provide images that show buildings from various vantage points in the neighborhood, and we will do that. I don't know when, but we'll get out and take some photos and drop in, okay, here's the view now, here's what it would look like with the building or with a building there. So then the final slide of what we heard last time, just some general comments, and these were kind of broader in nature, but they came through in a lot of the comments, and I'll just read them out. San Francisco is a city of neighborhoods with different density levels next to each other, the implication being it's very possible, it doesn't have to match even. We are in a housing crisis, so maximize the number of housing units. On the other side, the proposed number of units does not meet the CAC goal of harmonizing with the surrounding neighborhood. And then finally, appropriate character and amount of housing are both important. Cannot ignore the character, but we also cannot ignore the need for housing. And so I think we'll probably touch on this topic more, looking at the folks here this evening. But yeah, you know, I think that last comment is really the way that we've approached this from the start. That, you know, there's a housing crisis. We need to build a lot of housing here. We need to build it right away. But we can't ignore making this a great place to live and being good neighbors to the folks that already live here. So with that, I will turn it back to Emily. Is that right?
Turn it over to Robert.
Oh, turn it back to Robert. All right.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, Robert Neal-Bauer again. Now, is there any questions from the CAC with regard to the recap? Okay, hearing none. Then I will open this up to the public hearing. And again, there's a 2 minutes, if you could confine your comments to 2 minutes, and then also state your name and your neighborhood. So we'll queue up over here. Are there any public comments to this particular item? Yes, we have one.
So
sorry to be a pest, Laura Westwood Park. Bridge Housing stated, and I think I heard this right, that ownership was 50-50. And if I remember right, it's 13% ownership to 87% rental. It's not 50-50. It's 50-50 affordable to market rate, but the ownership was 13-87. And then my other question was, I meant to talk to him before the meeting. I wish Bridge Housing would explain more. I didn't like that idea that you could get more, you'd be in an affordable housing, you'd make more money, and that extra money would raise your rent and it would go back to Bridge Housing rather than you be, you know, told you have to leave and make room for someone else that's not, you know, making your raised money to be in an affordable unit. That idea doesn't make sense to me. And he didn't talk about that part at all.
Okay. Other public comments?
So if you're going to make public comment on this particular item, go ahead and line up kind of near the podium, and then we can go through everyone.
And I would remind the speakers that the comments should be confined only to the recap.
Not the fiscal.
The fiscal will come next. There will be another opportunity.
Well, since I'm standing here, and I will never get an answer anyhow. My name is Heather Thieme, and I had a question pertaining to the traffic study, what has been done about it, because I nearly was run over on Ocean Avenue. And if you want to put another 3,000 people into this neighborhood, you have a problem. And I like to hear about the traffic study. And the other question which I had asked for was that earthquake water pipes are inadequate on the south and western side of San Francisco. And if you have an emergency, you will be thinking of me because you will be bacon, fried crisp. We need the water pipe study, and we need efficient water flow before you start building.
Okay, please, your name and your neighborhood.
Hi, my name is Elika Etemad, and I move around a little too much. I just wanted to comment on the earlier comment about how somebody whose income goes up and then has to move out or can stay. One of the issues with affordable housing is that as people improve their situation, they're forced to move out, and it just creates an instability in the community, which does not help the community. And so that, I think, is one of the reasons to have that kind of policy.
Thank you. Hi, Victoria Fierce, downtown Brooklyn. I'm kind of disappointed at the slide that was up here a little bit ago, where at the very bottom of the, it was talking about the affordable housing, and commenting on the recap. The affordable housing, it says, provide more information and examples of successful affordable housing in other neighborhoods. I'm kind of really disappointed that this group saw fit to put it up on the presentation and consider that to be some kind of legitimate feedback. I think affordable housing is housing for people who live in it. It's, of course, going to be successful. I can't think of anything that's not been successful, because this isn't, this isn't market rate housing completely. This has affordable housing in it. Like, I think that's a pretty awful classist dog whistle. So I'm really disappointed that this was on the slides and that was actually even considered at all tonight. Thank you.
Excuse me, sir. Could you repeat your name again? We're not sure if our recorder.
Victoria Pierce.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I'll return to the committee. Are there any comments with regard to the presentation? Hearing none, we'll move on then. Okay. This is the big item tonight. It's an overview of fiscal feasibility. And again, the protocol here is I'd like to have staff make their presentation all the way through uninterrupted so that they can get to the end of it. I'll bring it back to the committee for questions that they may have with regard to what they have heard. We'll open it up for public comment, again, 2 minutes, and then we'll bring it back to the committee for our particular comments.
Great, thanks, Robert. So once again, Emily West with the Office of Economic and Workforce Development. So I'm gonna review the fiscal feasibility report and the fiscal feasibility findings, which frankly is a pretty wonky bureaucratic process, but it is an important legislative milestone for us, so wanted to make sure that everyone understood what was going on. So city law requires that for certain projects that are going to utilize public land or public funds, the Board of Supervisors needs to make findings that those projects are, quote, fiscally feasible and responsible before those projects can even file applications with the planning department to start environmental and technical review. So it's pretty simple what the board is looking for. Basically, is the project going to bring in more new tax revenue than the amount of money that is needed to service this new place that it's creating? So the Board of Supervisors wants to make sure before we put a lot of time and staff resources into analyzing this project that it's going to be a good deal for the city and something that's realistically going to move forward. It gets a little bit confusing because fiscal feasibility sounds a lot like financial feasibility, but it's actually something distinct. Financial feasibility looks at the developer's finances, how much revenue in rents and home sales it's bringing in for the developer, and then how that compares with the cost of the development. That's not what we're looking at. We're only looking at the tax revenues and the service costs to the city. So it's a pretty circumscribed thing that the board needs to make findings on right now. So the board is going to consider a resolution that makes basically three findings. Finding that the project is fiscally feasible and responsible, authorizing the project sponsor to submit applications to the planning department to start environmental review, and also making it very clear that by doing this, they're not approving any part of the project. They're just allowing this analysis to go forward. So in addition to the piece of legislation, the resolution itself, we're planning to introduce some supporting documents. So the first two of these are on the CAC's website. There's a development overview describing the project, the fiscal feasibility analysis that was prepared by a third-party consultant, and then the Board of Supervisors has their own independent budget analyst that's going to get the resolution and these documents, do their own report, and make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. So that hasn't happened yet. I'm not going to talk about that, but I'm going to talk about the first two documents. All right, well, so the first one is what we're calling a development overview. It's a general description of the project as it currently stands. It's not seeking approval for that description, it's just providing background information so that everyone knows what it is that we're talking about. And the way that we describe it in that document is based on two other documents that people should be pretty familiar with, the development team's original proposal and the development principles and parameters that came through the CAC in 2015 and 2016. Although we've been talking about refinements to the project to kind of move beyond that version, nothing has been agreed to. So the version that we wanted to put into this process and have the fiscal feasibility analyst study is this familiar old version. In addition to describing the anticipated characteristics of the project, it also starts laying out what process and what milestones the Board of Supervisors can expect in the future, and in particular that we need to go back to them when the environmental review is all over, and actually have them approve everything. Oh, good. Thank you. So just to really briefly recap what was in that proposal and the project as it's described in that overview for people who aren't familiar with it. It was 1,100 housing units, 50% of them affordable to a combination of low, moderate, and middle-income households, collaborating with City College around a parking solution because, as I think most people know, this site is currently utilized by City College, owned by the city, but utilized by City College for parking. So figuring out the right way to make sure that City College folks can continue to access their education at City College. And also collaboration around housing, which Brad and Joe briefly mentioned. At least 4 acres of publicly accessible open space, a child care center, and a community room on site. Residential parking limited to a ratio of 0.5 parking spaces for each new home, as well as a shared parking garage to serve that City College need. And that the project also needs to have a pretty robust transportation demand management plan and sustainability plan. So that general description is what we shared with our third-party consultant who did his own expert assessment of what the fiscal impact and the fiscal feasibility of the project would be. And then, as I mentioned, that is what's going to be looked at by the budget analyst who will make their own recommendation on top of that. So those will be two pieces of information for the Board of Supervisors to consider. I'm going to go through the main findings in terms of the numbers for that report, but just a couple things to flag. These are all in 2018 numbers, but I think, as we all know, costs and all of these numbers do escalate, so probably in reality, they'll be even higher. And they're also going to move around as we refine the program and pin down exactly what is going to be built. But broadly, the report found that every year, once the project is built, it's going to bring about $4 million into the city's general fund. That's largely revenue from property taxes, but it's also from transfer taxes, vehicle licensing fees, sales taxes paid by the new residents, parking taxes, and gross receipts taxes. And then in addition to that general fund revenue, an additional $1 million is going to come in each year through a combination of property tax that's designated to specific uses, not the general fund uses, but very specific things, parking taxes that go specifically to the SFMTA for transportation services, and sales taxes that get devoted to public safety and our other transportation agency, the County Transportation Authority. And then on top of that, it's going to generate $1.2 million in education funding. So then compared to that, the report looks at the anticipated costs of serving the site every year. And the main costs that it looks at are maintaining the new roads and providing police and fire services. And that's estimated to add up to about $1.5 million a year. So when you take that first $4 million in general fund revenue, you subtract out certain set-asides that, even though that money flows through the general fund, the city can't and the board can't budget it for whatever it wants. It's targeted to SFMTA, to the library fund, to the children's fund. So you subtract that chunk out, you subtract out the service expenditures, and you're still left with about $1.7 million net each year in new tax revenues. And that's in addition to that $1 million in other funding that I had mentioned and the $1.2 million in education funding. So that was annual revenues that come in on an ongoing basis, but there are also a set of one-time revenues that the project will generate as it's being built. So it's going to be required to pay impact fees, which are estimated at about $23 million based on the city's standard impact fee rates currently. That gets paid when the building permits are issued for each building. And in some cases, the project, because it's providing so many public benefits already, may receive in-kind credit for meeting some of those fee obligations actually in kind on site by actually delivering the benefits instead of just paying into a fund for them. So that's another potential adjustment, but the number that we're going to be starting out with and negotiating around is that $23 million. And then additionally, taxes that get collected during the construction period, paid largely by the construction company that's going to be actually putting people to work and buying materials and building this project, are sales taxes and gross receipts taxes, which are estimated to add up to about $3.3 million in total. There's also another one-time cost to talk about, which is the amount of subsidy that's needed to make sure that the project gets up to 50% affordable housing. Some of you may remember, we started the conversation talking about a 33% affordable housing rate at the project, so that 33% of all of the homes built would be permanently affordable. As part of the conversation and a lot of advocacy that happened during our first stage of community outreach, we increased that number to a 50% target. But in order to get to that 50%, public financing needs to come in. And so this report flags that, and it shares an estimate that to get up to 50%, to get from that 33% baseline to the 50% target, would cost about $26 million in subsidy, and based on the original proposal of 1,100 housing units, that would pay for 187 additional homes to be permanently affordable. So we've identified a set of potential funding sources for that subsidy, and that's repeated in the report. They include subsidy dollars from the state, reinvesting some of that annual tax revenue back in the project, revenues from future housing bonds, and if voters pass a new gross receipts tax for housing in June on the June ballot, that's also a potential source. And then finally, it goes into some additional fiscal and economic benefits. So it looks at job creation, which is estimated at about 2,800 construction job years. So each job year is a year of full-time employment for one worker, for one construction worker. And then only about 41 permanent jobs on the site, because it's a housing project, not a commercial office project. There are gonna be jobs around maintenance and landscaping, property management, providing childcare at the childcare center, operating the parking. But again, it's going to primarily be housing. And then finally, there'll be benefits to the SFPUC as the property owner. They're required to get fair market value for their land and then pass that revenue on to their ratepayers. So they'll receive that, and they also have the opportunity to become the power provider at the site, so to grow their power operations and their power enterprise by participating that way. There's a two-step process to take the fiscal feasibility resolution and the supporting documents through the Board of Supervisors. First, it goes to the Budget and Finance Committee that needs to make a recommendation for the full Board of Supervisors to hear it. And then, assuming that that recommendation is made, it goes to the full board. We won't for sure know the precise schedule until the board formally agendizes it, but it looks like we will most likely be going to the Budget and Finance Committee on Thursday, March 1st. That's a morning meeting starting at 10 a.m. And that's the place where public comment happens specifically on this item. So that's really the one to know about if you want to come out and make public comment for the board to hear. The full board meeting does not have a public comment period, but the supervisors still will discuss the item if they would like to before they vote. It looks like that will most likely be on Tuesday, March 13th, and the board meetings start at 2 p.m. At 2 p.m., yeah. Both of those hearings take place in room 250 of this building, and we will email everyone who is on the email list to either confirm that those are the dates and times or to update you if they change. So if you are not on our newsletter email list, there is a URL on your agenda where you can go sign up, or if you sign up on the sign-in sheet that is over on that table, we will add you to it. So I'm going to pass it over to my colleague Jeremy Shaw from the Planning Department to talk briefly about what happens next. So we've been talking about how this is an important milestone because it allows us to start environmental review, and Jeremy's going to talk a little bit about that process and what that means.
Thank you, Emily. I'm Jeremy Shaw with the Planning Department. Just have one slide on CEQA today, so hang in there. This is an adjusted timeline. It's something that many of you have seen before. For those who are new, this will be on the website along with the whole presentation today. But briefly, just across the top, that first row are mostly our technical and environmental steps. So the black dot you can see is the fiscal feasibility process that Emily just explained. The schedule as it stands now would be that we would issue a notice of preparation for the environmental document after the fiscal, in March, April, May, the spring basically, and that is a moment when the public can see what the scope of the EIR will be. So it's the scope that describes the document that we will be working on for the next year and a half. So that is a public process for about 30 days. And then that box, for those of you who can see, after the notice of preparation, there's the technical analysis. This is where we get to understand all the impacts and all the effects that the proposal might have in terms of physical impacts. And so that's where we really get into the subject matter and understand more of the things that we've been talking about, the CACs, on a technical level. Sometime towards the turn of the year 2019, the draft EIR will be issued, and that's another moment for public comment. Everything in orange you see on the timeline is a public process or has an opportunity for public input. So the draft EIR will be issued. There will be a comment period and a hearing to comment on that. And then all of the comments that the planning department hears on the draft go back to the shop, and environmental planners respond to every question and every comment, so the public can see what the city's responses are and if the project needs to change to affect, if the project is accurate, and if anything needs to change before it becomes a final EIR. And the schedule as shown would have the final EIR and certifications towards the end of 2019. This is a rough sort of projected schedule, but that's kind of the basic steps. And all along the way, the CAC, this body, will be meeting. So there will be an additional layer of public comments or public opportunities to discuss the matter outside of that environmental process.
Okay, thank you, Jeremy. Robert Milburn. Okay, so for the presentation, are there questions of staff from the Citizens Advisory Committee? Yes, John.
John Liston. The impact fees, $11.3 million for transportation sustainability fee. How does that get spent? Does that end up in the general SFMTA fund? Or what I would like to see is that it gets paid, spent at the point of impact right here on in the reservoir that we use. One of the issues that are first and foremost for this project is how to move people in and out of the reservoir, how to deal with, how to improve muni and other services to get people in and out for transportation. And I would like to make sure that money gets spent in the reservoir if possible.
So for a typical project, the code prescribes that some of that money goes to the SFMTA for citywide service and citywide needs, and another part of it gets spent locally. And because this is a project that's going to have a development agreement, there will be an opportunity to talk about kind of a more customized approach to the transportation fee and transportation spending.
This is where I have just about a question or two.
Michael Ahrens, member of the CAC, Westwood Park. On the slide, comparison of revenues and costs, I understand the 1.7. What you do there is you subtract from the gross general revenue collected all of the costs of getting there, so you come out with a net of 1.7. I understand the $1 million 050, because that was pretty clear in the report what that annual benefit was. Can somebody explain to me what the state education revenue is?
Yeah, I'm going to take a stab at it, although I may need a colleague to jump in. The state requires that a portion of property taxes be put into local education funding, and it's the State Education Augmentation Fund, so it came out of a concern that local cities and counties and school districts weren't able to put enough money into the schools, and so the state basically required them all to put this extra money aside to be able to put into the school system.
So this is not my area of expertise. So the state pays money to the city?
No, so this is just a portion of local property taxes. So of the property taxes that you pay, some of them go into the general fund, some of them go into these other dedicated revenues, and some of them go into this education fund.
But how is that a revenue from, how is that a benefit that the project is affording to the city? I understand the 1.7, how that's a benefit to the city. I understand the $1 million, and that was explained well. I'm still a little lost, so maybe I can just understand it before the next meetings, but I don't understand the 1.2.
So that's also coming from property tax revenue that gets paid by the new buildings that are being built on the site.
Oh, okay. So that's in addition to the 1.7?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I can't tell you why our consultant decided to break it out that way, but he did, so we're trying to kind of stay true to that point.
And I would assume between now and March 1, anyone can talk to your consultants and get further education on this.
Yeah, so I think it would be best if there are questions and clarifications. We can respond to them whenever. I think in the next week or so would be like most effective for our ability to respond to them.
Thank you.
John Winston again. I had one more question. Going back to the recap of the developer's proposal, since I brought this up a couple of meetings in a row now, and still haven't quite got the answer straight in my head. The residential parking, according to our parameters, is set at 0.5 spaces per home, it says here, per unit. On average, I guess is really what it is. But then there's a shared garage serving City College community. Other documents I've seen showed that the total number of parking spots at 1,100 parking spots, which to me seems like 1-to-1 parking, not 0.5-to-1. So I understand that we want to share the parking that, so that when parking spots are available during the day, they can be used for City College. And I also understand the need for possibly more parking for City College, and maybe I'm not in principle against another 500 parking spots to replace the 1,000 spots we've taken away, but I don't want to call that the shared parking spots, shared parking. I'd like to have that clarified, exactly what parking is for whom and who's paying for it and who's going to be able to use it. I want to make sure that City College gets their parking and that the parking for the residents stays at 0.5-to-1.
So I would like to flag that for the development team to come back on our next parking focus meeting and really give a breakdown of that. Does that sound good, Joe?
Yeah, the short answer is we're still sorting that out, but yeah, we can come back.
Okay, other questions with regard to this presentation from the CAC? Okay, I have a couple of questions. When you're looking at estimated city costs, $1.5 million, it's a general question. How do you arrive at these numbers? I mean, road maintenance, $80,000, just seems like a real low figure.
And so is this based on a formula? Is this based on...
Yes.
On what?
So for the police costs and the fire costs, we talked to the police department and the fire department to get kind of qualitatively a general sense of how they would serve this project. But in terms of calculating the actual cost, they haven't come up with a specific service plan. And so what the consultant did was looked at the citywide budget for both of those departments, calculated a per capita cost, kind of broke it out into a per capita cost, and then multiplied it out by the number of people that could be anticipated to live here. So it was just the fair share. And he did something similar with the roads, basically looking at how many linear feet of roadway are going to get created, and kind of what in his experience it costs cities to typically service each linear feet of roadway, and just multiplied it out.
Thank you. And similarly, when you look at this number, going over to the housing subsidy cost, the current subsidy estimate is $26 million. That's a big number. Can you elaborate at how that number is arrived at?
So that was the developer's initial estimate. It's a number that we are going to be vetting and recalculating as the affordable housing program gets pinned down. But again, we made a decision to kind of start with the initial proposal and have that be what is presented here.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to open this up for public hearing now. And again, if you will queue up by the microphone here. And again, state your name, your neighborhood. Before we do this, I'm sorry, we're going to take about a 5-minute break for our closed caption to rest her fingers for a moment, so everybody can cool their jets for a little bit, and we'll reconvene in 5 minutes.
I hope they hear me say that cars are stupid. There should be a man from San Francisco.